Hello and welcome everybody to our new season with our guest series. Now how this works, we are still going to continue our regular Big Chew episodes where we break down long form podcast. The guest series we're doing is a long form podcast with our own guest who has, you know, a perspective in a certain field that they're working in, a crazy story that they have that we want to know more about for entertainment and also for, you know, knowledge that we can gain. Now, because the conversations are so long, actually time stamped by topic. So if you wanted to still get that Big Chew feeling, you can kind of like jump to kind of the maybe the things that stand out to you that you want to learn about, or you can just enjoy the whole thing.
Just basically starts to go, I want to talk about all things not crypto. I'm sure, I don't know if you heard like Haley's podcast, we talked about, you know, do we think that memories are held inside objects like houses, and like, do you feel energy? Mm-hmm. So yeah, and she's, you know, her thing is massage. So, and everything around that. So we'll talk about everything, and which I definitely want to hear your thoughts on all those ethereal crazy
things. Did you already have something on your mind today? Like that was already just kind of sitting there?
So I sent it over in the email, but I'm like, I haven't been super heavy on it the last few years, but like quantum physics is fascinating to me. And I think there's a lot of interesting, some different threads that could be strung together that go back to, I mean, one, the quantum physics itself and how that's actually, you know, in a lot of ways explain things like the law of attraction and, you know, think it, become it, so on and so forth. But then even on more of like a pop culture side of things, it's interesting to observe how a lot of these major media companies, the whole premise of predictive programming, and this idea that they have to tell you something before they are released of this karmic debt, perhaps taking advantage of you, and why we're seeing so many films, particularly the Marvel and the DC movies, talk about the multiverse and all of this, is because they have to explain quantum physics to you.
That's probably, is that why you listened to the Michio Kaku episode? I mean, I listened to the whole thing. I'm sure you probably did too, the quantum physics shits, because that's like so interesting to me. And I was thinking about the same thing. I'm like, get to put stuff in place to then get everyone on the same page. But, I mean, he's saying that they may have something to get to that quantum level of computing within 10 to 15 years.
He was saying
that's
10.
What he's saying.
What,
10.
What do you think about that, Savon? So, like, well, first of all, we like to do the introduction in during the podcast instead of doing it. So, which I have yours, which you wrote down here. So Savon, you're all things crypto in my mind and a whole lot more. You're a whole lot more, but, I want to give you your flowers. So you're the founder and managing partner of Native Assets, which is an exponential innovation consultancy providing advisory service, educational training, industry analysis, and white glove implementation service for major brands, corporate, small businesses owners as well, exploring Web3, AI, is it vibratory technologies and beyond? Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And then here's your, you told us that the mission of Native Assets is simple. You want to empower clients with a tactical advantage within their fields by upskilling domain expertise and implementing bespoke solutions for enhanced leverage, optimization, and growth within their business, which sounds like some badass stuff. If these quantum, so Michio Kaku talked about this. He says that quantum computers are on the horizon. We already have versions of them now. In 10 years, it will be like the full, I guess it's kind of his prediction, the full breed of the thing. How does that affect your, well, I mean, it affects everyone's world. How does that affect the crypto world?
How does it affect the crypto world?
That's so hour and a half long answer.
I'll say it like this, right? Where we're heading, and the reason I put, you know, exponential technologies and vibratory technologies, right, is because we were in this period and these things happen cyclically, right? You know, the idea there's nothing new under the sun, you know, except, you know, we may have forgotten and now we're being reintroduced to things. But we're in this era where you can't really look at technologies in this silo, because the most impactful ones, they're going to overlap in some way, shape, or form with another technology. And it's often when you see these things merge and intersect that you really get how it affects somebody on a day-to-day basis, right? Give you an example. When we talk about quantum computing, the idea there is that the these computers, they run computations not using circuit boards, but they run computation between dimensions. And I'm not going to sit and pretend to explain like precisely how they actually do that, other than go back to definitions from quantum physics of quantum entanglement and spooky theory and all this other shit. But effectively what it means is they can run many, basically an unlimited number. There still is a limit connected to the qubits and all this other stuff. But in theory, they can run an unlimited number of processes and computations in parallel and then bring back the answer.
And it runs it runs on atoms, right?
And go ahead, Zach, but I'm going to bring this back to AI and then bring it back to metaverse and then bring it back to
because the biggest thing I'm wondering is if you start computing at quantum level, what happens in the other dimensions that you're not in doing the computation of? Do you get what I'm saying? Because it could go across. So I'm wondering, like, let's say we just got, you know, we're just doing a simple math. We're just like figuring out a new virus strain or cure something. We put it in a quantum computer and then some dimension somewhere else just goes upside down and fucks them up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know how. Yeah. So that's a big question too, but no one's talked about it. Not that I've heard.
Maybe not directly, right?
Right.
And I want to come back to how this ties back into AI and metaverse and some of these other things. But are either of you all familiar with the Large Hadron Collider?
That would be a negative.
No,
Finally, the Large Hadron Collider.
No, so, law of Hadron Collider?
Large, like large, Hadron Collider.
Uh-huh.
And so maybe it's Hadron, but anyway, LHC. There are a few of these in the world. The primary one is in CERN, Switzerland.
Oh, yes. Okay.
I know what you're talking about. Yep, I got it.
This is where they found the Higgs boson.
The
God particle, right? And so the reason I bring that up is there is much speculation that this machine is actually creating these tears in reality, right? For lack of a better term. And so to your question, Zach, of what happens when we run these computations, the short answer is I don't fucking know. However, once they started to crank up the energy and the intensity at which this collider was running, I was really like deepest in this around like 2015, 2016, research-wise. I haven't really tapped in a while. But this idea that as they were increasing the energy level of this machine, we were starting to see more and more pronounced effects in all reality. And what this manifested as was this thing called the, it's slipping me right now. But it created these paradoxes for certain people, supposedly. And for instance, there was this thing around the Berenstain Bears and the Home Depot versus Home Depot. And, I really hope the name of this phenomenon comes back to me. But it was this idea that things that were one particular way in somebody's reality. Right. So like in this reality, Noah, you have brown hair, you wear glasses. In another reality, you're the exact same, but your hair is black.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's another. And so we grew up with the Berenstain Bears as a book, as a children's book.
Mm-hmm.
But then one day overnight, there were people saying, actually, I think it's the Berenstain Bears. And the
Mandela effect.
Mandela effect. Yes, sir.
Yes.
So the idea that the Mandela effect was a consequence of this Large Hadron Collider, because every time they run these particles together, they're actually, you know, potentially collapsing the fabric of space-time and onto itself, which then potentially kicks certain people into a slightly adjacent reality.
Wow.
Where 99.9% of things are exactly the same, but a few things changed.
It's
so subtle that most people don't even notice those changes. And I only bring that up to say that, Zach, potentially, when we're running all these computations on a quantum computer, they kick out these variations on some other side, and that would bring us back to the idea that we're already in a simulation. And so, anyway.
Right, that was a question that Joe never asked Michikaku about. And for our listeners, the Large Hadron Collider, it's the world's largest and highest energy particle collider. I mean, that's what it is. That's what we're talking about.
There's some examples of the Mandela effect that might be right on par with this. For example, both of you real quick, spell Skechers. You guys remember Skechers, the shoe brand?
Bro, I'm dyslexic. I can't spell this shit.
All right, Savon. Savon, how do you remember Skechers being spelled?
S-K-E-T-C-H-E-S.
Exactly. Exactly with a T, right? There's no T in there.
I got the R. There's an R.
I did forget so,
well, he said Skechers. But the T was the main thing that so this is like part of the Mandela effect. Oh. Everyone remembers the T being in Skechers, and it's S-K-E-C-H-E-R-S. And then there's another one. And there's another one. I think it's with Curious George, and it's like, does he have a tail or not have a tail?
He has a fucking tail, right?
So, but like apparently, we like to remember he has a tail, and then if you look, if you look at it, he doesn't.
Fucking my whole childhood. What?
Yeah.
He would no tail.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at it. Yeah.
Wait. So let's say a 1% change. Why would we even remember that? Do you get what I'm saying?
100%. Well,
so why would we remember if something changed like that?
Well, because maybe it's because it was like that, and then it altered the reality slightly.
It altered it currently, and then but we still remember what it was. Okay, I guess that makes sense.
And if we're in a game, right, if we keep this analogy of being in a simulation, your character has like a fixed field of view, point of view in the world around them. And something could change in the environment, but the character not change. And so in that way, it's, you know, our environment changed, but the character didn't, which is also part of why some people recall it one way or the other. That's part of the controversy, is that it's not like this unanimous, ubiquitous. And then that goes to this idea that it's kind of based on your own frequency level as to when these changes happen, what side you get split off on.
Bro, I'm like looking at this. That machine is 17 miles.
Yeah, man. It's crazy. You should see there's something called the Gossard Tunnel. And they did this, like this celebration ritual back, I want to say it was in 2016 or 2017. And it's just some strange things about CERN. Also, for people listening, CERN is the same organization. They were vital in helping create the internet, if I recall correctly. And outside of their headquarters, they have a statue of Sheba the Destroyer. Of course. Right? That doesn't mean anything, but it's quite interesting. And somebody from there, I could have sworn they literally had a quote where they were saying that there is the risk that they collapse the fabric of space-time, you know, when they run this machine. So, again, I mean, they have to do certain shit.
I know they're worried about that when they're, you know, messing with nuclear power, nuclear bombs, which is not really crossover to, like, what these machines are doing now. Different. But those fears. I remember, have you ever read about how when they first invented the train, they thought people were going to die because they were going too fast and shit like that?
They also thought that movies would be too fast for our eyes to be able to, like,
compute it out
and be able to do it. And so, like, we'd have, like, we'd all have, like, epilepsy and we couldn't do it.
It's a question. It's like, how wrong could these thoughts be or how right could it be? Or if 1% changes, how big could that 1% be? Like, one small thing technically could be disastrous.
There's a couple of weird things when it comes to major corp. Well, there's not just a couple. There's several things. Like, I don't know if you guys remember that Google had "Don't be evil" as its former motto, and then it changed it. I mean, it's apparently it's "do the right thing," which that's cool, I guess. But Apple, it's a little strange that if you look at Adam and Eve. It's like taking a bite out of the apple. What's in the back of your phones? It's an apple with a bite out of it. That's a little strange. You could
or a genius. So yeah,
or a genius. they definitely.
This Gothard. You talked about the Gothard base tunnel.
So there's this video. It's many years old, but there's like this procession, and they have people dressed up in like, white wings, and then there's like a train flat, and they have a bunch of people in orange jumpsuits dancing on the train, and it's like a 6-7 hour performance that they did to open up one of these tunnels, it's in the vicinity of the Large Hadron Collider, and for people who haven't really studied it, I went through a really intense few years where I was like super deep into studying a lot of these things, but
you mean you're still? I remember having those conversations in 2015.
Exactly.
So
when people carry out rituals, they a lot of it is the part of doing the ritual in and of itself that gives something energy. Hmm. Right? It's just like you know, you got some people that they'll burn incense. I got an incense burning right now. You have some people who burn Palo Santo or sage or something else like that in a space. You have some people who they have a little ritual they do before they go sell or close a client, before they play a game. And all of these things, often the meaning is very much for the person doing the ritual. And it's not going to be very obvious to outside parties what the intention of the ritual is. So it can look very benign, or it could be a lot of meaning and layers in that that you have to dig a little bit deeper at to understand. Or, for instance, in this situation with the Gotha Tunnel, if all they're doing is opening a new train pathway, why are they choosing this particular ritual, you know, where they have basically what would appear to be the Whore of Babylon, you know, a goat, and just a lot of really strange elements associated with
a lot of strange
what the fuck
representation. Yeah, so like even the description of the tunnel, it goes back and forth. And again, this is on Wikipedia, so anyone can change it, I guess. But it goes back and forth between say tunnel entrances and tunnel portals. Like without like kind of go, it's like it's worded pretty weird. This thing's like 30 plus miles long, longest train tunnel in the deepest traffic tunnel, which is weird. Okay. But
in here, I didn't mean to derail us. So
it's not a derail.
No, I think it's just interesting.
Do you think they're working on a bigger version of the Hadron Collider? Because I mean, that thing is like 17 miles. It took 10 years to build, and it was finished in 2008. I mean, have you heard anything? Are they making anything bigger than that?
I haven't looked into it a ton.
Okay,
but my hunch would be, looking at the qualities of mankind, that is, we tend to want more, do bigger. And I don't know if they would be constructing a larger one necessarily at this moment versus just increasing the power level.
Well, one thing kind of goes along these lines that I was listening to yesterday. I know that we covered the UFO congressional hearing. Savon, did you hear or watch that like on TV or anything or see anything about it?
Most recently, some tangential things, but okay. Catch me up to speed.
Essentially, three or four days ago, they finally got a SCIF permission to go and actually a SCIF meeting outside of the Congress members, like AOC, Mandu, a couple other people got to go in a SCIF. Something that came out, they're all pissed because they didn't really get more information, right? Obviously, they knew that was coming. But one guy came out and he was like, yeah, there's been a discovery of a new propulsion system, which has to do with the whole anti-gravity thing. Yeah, exactly. And then she was pressured. He was like, yeah, did he say this? He was like, well, I'm not going to answer that, but you can just guess, you know?
Was Grush in the SCIF?
I don't know if it was, I don't think Grush was in this SCIF, but the Congress members were in the SCIF with the people that Grush said he could put them in contact with, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But they were pissed. They said nothing came out of it. This was on a weaponized, I share on my Instagram, this is on a weaponized podcast that came out like 2 days ago. And they brought in one of the Congress members on a podcast and like what happened, he kind of went through it and talked about it. But that's pretty much the biggest thing. But that's what Bob Lazar has been talking about since, you know, the 90s. But it's the same thing, that whole, okay, cool. If you have some kind of power source that can alter gravity, that's how you can explain all these movements, which is, again, which goes into this Hadron Collider that could go even further. So we don't really know. The two things is that when they asked, okay, are aliens real? All right, are UFOs real? The answer inside the SCIF was something along the lines of, well, I hope they are, because if they're not, that means somebody who we don't know on this world has stuff like this already, and we would be screwed. So that is kind of like the halt right there. And multiple countries are still getting involved and sharing what they have. And there's a lot of pressure. And Congress is, I think they've, what is it called when someone doesn't pay their taxes? Like,
tax evasion?
Basically, the Pentagon is under tax evasion, like investigation for all these.
They should be. Finances. They're missing like $6 trillion every year.
Yeah, Congress has been pressuring them for the last couple of years, and there's no answers. So
Yeah, where the fuck did $6 trillion go? You know, and it's like,
with these propulsion systems,
like investigate. You know, like I'm just saying, someone's gonna do something. It's gonna come out or not, or something to alter the universe, and we're all gonna be like, why the fuck?
You can take it there if y'all want to take it there, man.
I want to take it here. I actually do want to take it there. So I want to ask you guys this. I've been saying this to my closest of friends for the last 4 years. I'll be 28 in March. Yeah, I'd say for the last 4 years. And when I said starting 4 years ago, and maybe it's because I'm getting older, maybe I'm developing some type of mental psychosis, I don't know, is that it feels like, I started saying this, like I said, 4 years ago, that when I started saying it, that in a decade, there's going to be some type of, I don't want to call it the singularity or like, but some type of major world-altering event going to happen, whether that be aliens, whether that be nuclear war, whether that be, I don't know.
We've talked about that, me and you.
Yeah.
Like the overall anxiety feeling of like, what the fuck is about to happen? Do I need to learn how to hunt and grow like some plants or something?
Yeah, exactly. What is it going to be? Is it going to be AI that has like the singularity? Is it going to be bioengineering and we become these things that just also aren't human? Is it aliens? Is it nuclear war? Is it going to be we do actually enter into a simulation? Do we find out that we're in one? Do we find out that there's multiple universe? Like, do we go into a different dimension? You know, what is going to be the thing where we go, nothing is the same anymore? You know, what are y'all's thoughts on that? I know that that was I've been feeling that way.
I have a short answer, guess. And here's what it is. So with quantum computing plus AI, so when you have the ability to compute on the level of an atom and then you let an AI use that, I feel like that could probably do some shit that we're, I don't know if people are ready for that. You know what I mean? That would be my first guess with, you know, Michikaku talking about that happening in 10 years. Saban probably has, I don't know. I mean, that's my most forethought guess as to what would be the weirdest thing that would has a feeling about that's negative.
Saban, what do you think?
Before AI takes over the blockchain.
So what I was going to, we can actually tie the threads together here. At the end, when distributed ledger technology really came to the forefront, the primary use case for it was the verification of information in a way that nobody could alter ever.
This is who you got it from.
It's like a permanent receipt.
I don't have special permissions that you don't. It can go back in later with admin settings and adjust it. That is literally why it's called distributed ledger technology, because it is a ledger that is spread amongst X number of people. Now, there are nuances. You have permissioned and permissionless ledgers, but the most common ones people think about, Bitcoin, so on and so forth, these are permissionless, which means everybody can access them, write to them, read from them.
Right.
So I say that because in this era of generative AI in particular, and not just, oh, these images look nice, but, oh, this audio sounds like Noah's grandma, sounds like Zach's mom. So on and so forth. Sounds just like me, right? You have this synthetic media that gets created through AI, and it only is going to improve. It is not going to get worse. It will only improve and learn how to be better at the nuances that really make it believable. And this is occurring at an exponential rate. Sure, it will plateau at a point, but we are a ways away from it plateauing. And so when you combine the ability for there to be this entity, this AI that can create effectively any stimulus, if we're talking about visually or auditorily, eventually it will get to, once it's plugged in to the right things, it'll be able to do it from a gustatory level. You'll have the AIs manufacturing and being the scientist, the chemist behind food combinations to make something like dirt or crickets taste like your favorite XYZ, whatever, because we know, anyway. Go on a whole nother tangent about Agenda 2030 and Codex Alimentarius and how they wind their buying up farm supplies and this. That's what I told you. I just want to talk about crypto, this motherfucker. So anyway, the blockchain is critical in being able to verify the source of something. And so that is going to be vital in people feeling some sense of assurance that when they get a message or a video or XYZ thing, that they can have some confirmation that it came from
Zach, a human,
from Noah, and not just from the ether of some AI.
Yeah.
Now, when you bring this over to quantum computing, the thing that I feel I'm shocked and more people haven't talked about is this thing of, okay, you can run a billion permutations or a trillion computations at one single time. So if anyone who's actually used generative AI systems, you know about prompt engineering, where you sit there and let's say I want that background that's behind you, Zach. It's a photo of Earth from the vantage of somebody kicking shit, drinking a beer on the moon. All right. So I could describe that in X number of ways to DALL-E or to Midjourney or whatever and try to get that outcome. I begin to tweak this parameter, tweak that parameter in my prompt to try to arrive at precisely what that image looks like. You feed this into a quantum computer, it will give you every variation possible instantaneously.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so then you have another AI that's designed to go through and sort, curate. The last few years, curation was a word that started coming up a lot. You don't have to be good at making content. If you want a content business, just become a really good curator of content, so on and so forth, which is what a lot of people do. And they build businesses off of it. But what I'm getting at here is when you combine the power of AI to be able to spit out any number of permutations around trying to clone your voice or clone what you look like or mimic in deep fake XYZ thing, and it's not corroborated on-chain so that somebody knows that it was from a human and not from this AI, you really begin to open up the aperture of potential scams or falsehoods that become valuable. And now you plug this into the spatial web and things like AR and VR, so it's not just all on my screen and when I shut my screen down, the image is gone, but truly this thing is now surrounding me.
Mm-hmm.
You have technologies like laser beam audio. There's actually something that DARPA created called the Voice of God weapon. They used this for the first time, if I'm not mistaken, in Desert Storm. And what they did is they directed this beam at the enemy troops and they made them hear what they told them was Allah in their mind.
What the fuck?
When you direct this beam, there's no where if you play your phone or your headphones, there's going to be leakage of the audio. You only hear it if the beam is pointed at you and you only hear it in your head. There's no audio actually coming out. There's no speaker. And so they pointed this at people and made them said things like, you know, this is Allah, put your weapons down, so on and so forth.
God.
And you hear this shit and you're a religious extremist, you're going to, oh my God, Allah. Yeah. I'm like, whatever.
Why don't they just beam one of those like on a whole fucking place and be like, hey,
that's,
man, just
that's psyops to a whole nother level. Is that confirmed, Savon? Like, do we know that that's a...
Yes. Yeah. Meaning Tomorrowland is using this same technology and they're building out an entertainment experience to augment their shows to use the same technology, man.
I forget what car company it is, but Randall Carlson talked about that. I remember talking to you about this, Noah, too, with the using sound to potentially those scoop marks, build the stones, carry huge weights like of granite for pyramids using sound. Mm-hmm. Is literally one of the like leading ways that they're like, okay, if you can do what he just described, I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, you can make someone's head explode with sound.
What was it called, Savon? The sound
voice of God weapon. And look up DARPA, DARPA.
Yeah.
And
wow.
The reason I brought that up was to bring it back to this idea of what could happen on a mass scale that would allow the unjust intervention of some entity or organization. Mm. And historically, we saw 9/11 be one of those major ones. They already had the Patriot Act drafted, ready to go, right? And then this changed a lot of how our world worked. And then the biggest thing after that, not in the same way, was 2008. They changed a lot of things around banking and lending. But then the closest parallel to 2001 was 2020. When they shut down the world and said, you have to go get this procedure done. You need to have this procedure done or you will get fired from your job.
Mm.
You can't go outside. You can't do this. You can't do that. And the next thing, who's to say what it will be? But there is a whole new slew of technologies. And these are just the things that we even have the ability to discuss. Mm-hmm. Because an institution like DARPA, any technology that a consumer interfaces with and becomes aware of, the military-industrial complex, the organizations that misplace $6 trillion a year, they are, whatever we find out, they have known and been using it for 15 to 20 years prior.
Yeah.
So all this AI generative shit that we're seeing today, some folks been using that for a while.
Yeah.
Right? Self-driving cars, levitation, lots of stuff, man.
Yeah.
Haley brought this up when the whole how you were feeling when they were saying like wear a mask, COVID thing, and like how you were like receiving that information and like acting in public and stuff. I was doing the same thing.
Yeah.
I thought it was bananas. And that literally, here's the biggest thing is I didn't fully understand that, I don't know, like, I'm not trying to be harsh, but I did not understand that many people fall in line so quickly around me. I felt I mean, I'm super rebellious. I always say no to authority anyways. I'm kind of like that, like to question everything, but like where I was, everyone around me, I couldn't believe it. I was like, dude, I was shocked. I was like, I was like expecting 50%, you know, to like go with it, you know, but everyone everywhere.
Well, the South, like, I mean, I got to say, at least like the South did kind of bounce back quicker than most. Like we didn't,
next, man, what do you expect?
Yeah. But like in a good way where it's like, hey, this is my liberty. Don't take that shit away from me. And, I mean, there's still people today that it makes me laugh. Like you'll see them with a mask in their car. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, what are you fucking doing?
They're going to be really sick, just breathing in their shit.
Breathing back in their own carbon.
We'll get into that, but like I related a lot when she was describing that and how you probably felt the whole time. I've definitely felt that. I mean, that's when I changed everything I was doing. It was interesting. Also, we got shadow banned for all that shit. I did for 100%.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff. So I was just like, wow. It was very interesting.
You just described, Savon, going back to it, you just said the ability of these, let's say, quantum computers to not just come up with a computation for like a, let's say a cure for a virus or whatever, but literally come up with a computation. So when you said you shut down this, cause that really hit me when you said you shut down your laptop screen, but then you were to look out around you and let's say that was a computed something made the reality around you like in an instant they could literally, so that's basically what you described was how the simulation could happen literally around you. And then because it's the other day I posted this on Instagram because it actually legit, you know, I've seen a lot of deep fakes and a lot of them are kind of fun, like they're just, you know, it's like funny stuff. I legitimately thought this was Adam Sandler and it was the comedian Kyle Dunnigan. He's hilarious, he does deep fakes, it's hilarious stuff. But the deep fake of Adam Sandler on his face was so real that I was like, oh, it's Adam Sandler. And it took me like 3 seconds, you know, until I was like, that's not Adam Sandler. And for me, 3 seconds that's too much already. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you should know within a second to two, like, I don't know. And it's just scary to think that with quantum computing that, well, like, you're literally, like, the reality around you could be also deep faked. You know what I mean? It could be a visual or auditorial stimulus created by something else that when you're not in the screen, you're still in the screen, if that makes sense. You're not looking at a screen, you're still looking at a screen.
To rewind a little bit, then we can come back to this because I know the people would be like, could be all over the place. Now this is from Forbes, but Forbes has published random stuff too, so it's not only it, but I get it, right? I've seen some stuff that was not true on Forbes, but during the summer disturbances in Washington, D.C., a top local military police officer asked the D.C. National Guard about deploying two military systems that seemed to come out of science fiction. One, the active denial system, ADS, makes the target's skin feel like it's on fire. The other, long-range acoustic device, LRAD, directs intense sound in a narrow cone. This sound is so clear and so powerful that it is nicknamed the voice of God.
Oh, my God.
Quote, unquote, I encountered both systems, one at Quantico, Virginia, the other in Fallujah, Iraq. Here's what I saw. So,
he's talking about the voice of God.
Yeah, so what he's talking about, that's probably been a thing for decades already, I would assume.
Yeah, the active denial system, I also came across this 2016, 2017. It's often used as a crowd control method. Because you can create these entire walls where if you try to cross or approach that threshold, it's the sensation, like when you walk in front of an oven and the door opens, it's that heat hits you. That's what it does. But there are no flames. You don't see it. Oh, it's just God. A beam.
Do you play Call of Duty?
I did in the past. I haven't played it in a while.
There's a weapon you can throw out. It's basically a panel. It's like 2 feet wide. Throw it on the ground, you go near it, shoots a beam of sound in whichever direction. It's literally this ADS, most dramatic. Like, it's literally the same thing.
A lot of these people ain't that creative, man.
But handheld, but like, you just use it. Like, you're just like, ah, oh, dude. There's this out there.
This voice of God weapon is, that's the scariest weapon I've ever heard in my life. Like, do you know how, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but if that was directed at me in my house and there's just a voice in my head saying, hey, kill yourself, kill, I'd just be like, how long until you fucking, like, how long would you guys last? I think I'd go like a day if it was just like.
Remember when I was talking about the psyops that they do to people?
And that's where a lot of these mass shooters come from. It's a combination of putting them on certain drugs. A lot of them are SSRIs or something else. And then they run these coordinated operations where, you know, and it's multiple levels, right? None of us are just saying, oh, they just point this thing and then you get someone to go shoot a place. But if you find someone who fits the profile, whether they were abused or they were bullied or this, that, and the third, they have a motive already. It's kind of just like deep in them. And then you put them on a certain subscription medication or drugs that makes them more susceptible or suggestive. And then you start literally sending thoughts to their head to make them feel schizophrenic or insane, which is part of how you get them to get the prescription prescribed to them. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you see something or you make a comment to your friend or your partner about you need window shades or something. And next thing you know, you get an advertisement on your phone. You know, they start having certain thoughts. And before you know it, they're seeing suggestive, you know, articles, or they're seeing recommendations to get weapons, or, you know, certain news stories that kind of explain how you get away with X, Y, Z. And it, again, I think people, average people day to day, truly underestimate the origins and the purpose, in a way, of clandestine operations and operatives, and the morality of a lot of these people and organizations, where to us, something may seem really cut and dry. You know, do this is wrong, do this is right. Okay. And a lot of these organizations don't believe that way. Oftentimes, there was this mentality of, oh, it's for the greater good. Weapons are dangerous. We need a reason to get weapons out of the ordinary citizens' hands, so we need justification. So let's get a few places shot up. There'll be a few dozen or a few hundred casualties, but in the process, we may save tens of thousands or millions of lives.
It's like therefore, Thanos, the Thanos method. You know what I mean?
It's the right thing to do.
Right. It's for, we do this for the greater good. Kill billions to save trillions kind of thing.
It sounds, and it's fucked up, but it's like, damn, like actually, if you just count a life for a life, damn, Thanos kind of right.
Have you heard Elon Musk talk about this? He was just interviewed with Lex Fridman, and he was like, yeah, I don't know where this whole idea comes from with not enough resources, not enough food. He's like, mathematically, we're good for a long, like so long. Like, we're not running out of anything. I don't know what people, he literally just is like, add it all up in the earth, we're good. We have plenty of time. There's so much resources for hundreds and hundreds of years to do things.
Was he talking about oil? Was he talking about food? Was he talking about, was he talking about?
Yes.
All of it?
Yes. Yeah, all of it. So definitely that is a perpetuated sale on people that we don't have enough. 100%. That's what I'd say.
So I believe that.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
And if we could, I so appreciate y'all. This is a beautiful conversation. We're tying so many threads together. The listeners may not have thought could get tied together. So in the future, I meet your mentality.
Yeah.
How your thoughts literally create your reality, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is, because some people in the past have asked me, like, so why would the government, why would this organization give a damn about lying to us? Like, for instance, you know, the shape of the earth or anything that can be controversial to some group of people, why would there not just be consensus about it? The reason is because by controlling how you think about a thing, you create this energy around it. And there's literally a term called an egregor. And an egregor is this idea that when there's enough thought or energy put behind something, it becomes its own life form.
Like Santa Claus.
Yes.
I'm not saying that as a joke, like legitimately, you know?
Yeah, that's a great example.
Yeah. Santa Claus is it's as real as Santa Claus is as real as any god, deity, whatever you believe, because there's so many people that believe, you know, that have made it a thing.
I mean, and someone told
energy you. Tour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when they perpetuate something like we don't have enough resources, the earth is dying. We're killing the earth. We have to leave to go to Mars. What does it do? It makes people believe this, internalize it, and not only does that collectively contribute to the mentality of the world, which then gets fed back and is like this flywheel of mentality and thought, but it also more directly shapes their behaviors, the things they do and choose not to do. Even so much that I'm positive, all of us know people in our lives who, if the conversation comes up about kids, they're like, no way, it's irresponsible to have kids in this world.
Which is really weird, but you're right. I've heard that many times, but I do think innately as a human being, if you don't have kids, you're going to feel weird. You're like, I probably should have, you know, like you're innately like, that's kind of like a thing that may come up. That's just as weird as like, I don't know, memorializing the dead. Like that's a human thing.
Well, yeah. And I have my own personal like gripes with like, if I want to bring a child into this world, but I don't have any gripes on anyone else doing it. You know, I think that's a strange thing.
But their examples are terrible. Like this is right now is technically the best time to do it versus any other time in human history that we are aware of.
Yeah.
Like
the kid's going to be like, it's going to have the most access to like modern medicine, most access to like technology, the most access to like good healthcare. So like technically, yeah, it would be. But Savon, you just opened up the egregor, or egregor, however you say that. I just looked it up and what you said was spot on. But I never knew that there was a word for this because I've always tried to describe it. I just want to do this for the audience because I think it's such a cool word. I think a lot of people know this, but they don't know the word for it. So an egregor is an esoteric concept representing a non-physical entity that arises from the collective thoughts of a group of people. Wow. What a great, like, you know, like it's, that's,
happened a lot.
That's what happened with COVID. That's the mass formation psychosis. It's literally like, I didn't know that word existed. That's what, when we were talking to Haley about like, hey, if you're at a really amazing concert, you feel that, I guess, egregor of like this, you know, this like we're all, it's like this collective thought of like that we're experiencing this thing. It's almost like, you know, when people say you can cut the tension with scissors, right?
Yeah.
That's like, it's like that. It's like that kind of thing. So that's a very, very cool word. Very, that's awesome. Anyway, I just thought that was kind of neat. To switch, I this is a major switch in gears, but I was just curious about this. Why do you think there's an uptick right now in cryptocurrency? Why is that going on? It is, what is today? November 14th, 2023. Why is there an uptick in crypto?
Keep it as simple as possible. It's because there are expectations of increased liquidity and combination with increases in global monetary supply, not necessarily directly in the West, the United States, but in other markets overseas.
Why expectations increased? There must have been some type of something, right? Because I've heard that there's been a war on crypto, and I want you to, if you could talk about that too, like people are trying to suppress it.
Operation Choke Point 2.0.
Okay, yes. Yeah. So tell me about that, and tell me about this. Why is the expectations increased or for increasing?
So markets have this thing known as forward guidance. And basically all this is when people in critical positions in the Federal Reserve or any other member central bank or the IMF, whatever, even just large institutions like JP Morgan or Goldman Sachs, so on and so forth. But particularly the people who set rules and policies. Before they do something, there's often a speech that's given where they effectively telegraph what they plan to do next.
Okay.
And with this tool, because it means that they don't actually have to do anything to get an outcome or an effect. I'll give you an example. This is usually boiled down to somebody being hawkish or being dovish. Hawkish is like bearish. Dovish is bullish. Mm-hmm. And so if Jerome Powell, who is the chair for the Federal Reserve, if he comes out and he's like, you know, I feel like inflation is slowing down, its rate of acceleration, the labor market is softening in a way that we were hoping to see, and consumer spending is trending down. You know, we feel like the measures we put in place are doing their job. Therefore, you know, we don't feel like we need to be as aggressive going forward.
Okay.
He didn't say anything concrete about what's going to happen at the next FOMC meeting, where he actually is going to announce any sort of changes in the interest rates or policies. But he told us that he feels like they've done a good job and they don't need to be as aggressive. So if I were to interpret his message, it would be safe to say, okay, cool. They're either going to not raise rates at all the next meeting, or they're not going to raise them as high as they have been raising them. Mm. All of which give me more confidence in the markets improving, which means that I may begin to either ladder out of my short positions or begin to add on size to my long positions.
Mm.
And so there's been basically talk like that for the last few.
That's what I was going to say. So has there been like some big like talk from like a big crypto head, like, or someone in the game that's been saying things like this?
So I have not followed it nearly as closely, but from what I have been looped into, that is basically the sentiment that was communicated a few months ago. Is like, yeah, there will be a few more rate hikes,
mm-hmm.
but like, we feel like we're getting close to where we need to be. So you have mm-hmm. that. Then you also just have the cyclical nature of the markets themselves.
Yeah.
Crypto runs on basically a 3.5-4 year cycle. So do traditional markets for the most part.
Yeah.
And so in 2024 is going to be the Bitcoin halving sometime around like April, May.
Is it going to be the what?
The Bitcoin halving, which is when like, the issuance of new Bitcoin as the block subsidy gets cut in half again. The last time it happened was 2020.
And then is that a good thing or a bad thing for
it is generally
investors?
A strong catalyst because supply, the velocity of new supply being issued into the market gets cut in half. So if demand stays the same or increases, in theory, supply demand economics price should go up.
Yeah, price. So
if you have that happening and you have interest rates either pausing or getting cut, and if you have new money, either of those two things, pulling new money into risk on, which means that they're diversifying out of the safe yields like the bonds and treasuries and throwing more money into risk assets, stocks, mm-hmm. so on and so forth,
mm-hmm.
all of these things will push prices up. So if
and
you have
potentially
that,
lower inflation, potentially, like overall, right?
Not exactly. So when more money comes into the market, it can cause inflation. Some people think that the cause, it was not the injection of capital in 2020 and 2021, but rather a consequence of like how our population is aging out and those sort of things.
Mm.
I'm not going to pretend to be an expert in all the nuances, but
yeah.
if you dump a bunch of new money into people's hands, most people are not going to sit on that money. They're going to do something with that money. So if they're out spending that money, then it's like there is more volume, more liquidity of this money. So supply of the money went up. So if demand stays equal, if demand does not go up for the same assets, or if demand does go up because people can afford it now, then these suppliers or sellers can raise their prices because demand increased.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's going to be a different crossover point on the axis of where, you know, they start to lose new buyers because they raise the price too high.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to zone out because that was a lot.
Okay.
It to me, it sounds like wherever the mass formation psychosis of human beings' belief in whatever system they want to use to trade some sort of value for labor, whether that's crypto, money, cash, or trading something, it seems like that belief is pretty much the most important thing as to where all of this stuff is going to go. And like, that's kind of what it seems like, because at the same time, what happens, like, how are you going to keep a blockchain if like the internet goes out? You know what I mean? Like something like that. It's like somebody like, oh yeah, I have all this stuff. It's like, not today. You don't, you know what I mean? So it's like a lot of it's going to be dictated by what everyone's seeing, where their beliefs are, and pretty much where they're going to sit with whatever asset they want to trade labor for. That's all really money is, because it seems to me that even with crypto being pretty much, you know, virtual, the money we were printing is all made up too. Like, we totally are not representing how much money we actually have in Fort Knox. Like, all of it is made up. We're just like,
I wonder if people are having the same exact conversation about credits, like credit cards, like in the 70s. I wonder if they were saying the exact same thing. Hey, this is, you know, well, first of all, like you said, Zach, money is the greatest lie ever told, or it's the greatest story. It's not a lie. It's the
story.
It's the greatest story ever told. The only reason money has value is because we've set a value for it. And that's the same with everything, right? But I wonder, in the 60s and 70s, I think that's when credit cards started becoming like, to the average, everyone started getting one. If they were like, but what happens if your database goes down and, you know, like, what do I have?
We're going to use the services for that time.
No, but I mean, like, what if it goes down completely? I have X amount in Wells Fargo, according to, you know, a zeros and ones. I have this amount in Wells Fargo. What happens if it completely gets shut down? How much do I have now? You have zero.
Well, you lose your money if your money is in a bank that fails, right?
So, but I guess what I'm trying to say is I wonder if that's what's like the same thing. Like, would you, you know, I mean, if a solar flare hits the earth in a certain way and it's just like a giant EMP and we don't, you know,
yeah.
Like, it's like no one has anything anymore. Like, it's like,
yeah. And to add to that, so as again, you are entirely correct, Zach. That dictates where people decide to allocate their capital. But in terms of numbers go up, that's entirely a function of liquidity. And you can look at charts that demonstrate this. If there is no liquidity, because when people go and they buy something, don't buy something someone had to sell.
Yeah.
That's true for stocks, for shares, and an ETF, for fucking crypto. You can only buy if there is a seller. Right?
So if you create an idea, you can sell it to anybody and they'll buy it.
No. You can create an idea, there has to be a buyer for it. And if you want to buy it, there has to be a seller. And so all I'm saying is, liquidity is the main driver of all of that. That's why when crypto crashed, so did the fucking stock market. So did every other market for the most part. Right?
Yeah, same thing.
The interesting thing about real estate is people who've never gotten into real estate, and I'm not super deep. I just bought a house. I basically like damn near got my real estate license in terms of how much information I learned. The way in which houses and real estate are valued is more of a finesse than crypto will ever be, because so much of it is based on the assessor and what they appraise your house for. And they appraise it based on what the last motherfucker sold for. So if the last motherfucker sold at an inflated rate, your shit's more likely to sell at an inflated rate. And if that shit sold for a shit price, yours is more likely to sell at a shit price. It's entirely their discretion, and it depends. We're gonna go deep into that. But as far as crypto and its value and its usefulness, right? Sure. You could look at it and say, oh, it's all digital. Your whole life is fucking digital. This business y'all are building with this podcast is goddamn digital. So if my crypto go out, your shit go out. If my crypto go out, every POS system that is used at the store that would even take your cash goes out. Most of them don't take cash anyway. Every bank that represents your balance, whatever it is that you hold, or your investment account at Fidelity or whatever else it might be, all them shits are computers. They all go
in ledgers. It's the same shit. That's what I was saying. Like, it's all pretty much like you're gonna have an issue anyways, no matter what.
That brings up the utility and the value of things. One, like knowledge, that's not just gonna go away when something like that happens. Which is why YouTube is so popular, podcasts so popular, because people want to get knowledge. Yeah. And then beyond that, actual real goods, land. Land ain't gonna disappear. I mean, they can set your shit on fire. They can flood you out. You know, they can direct storms at your land. And we
can use the heat wave. They could use the heat ray and the voice of God on you.
Yeah. But before I end this, though, and we maybe segue to some other strange, far-off idea, something like Bitcoin, and literally this was not an original thought. I was listening to a podcast by a gentleman by the name of Nathaniel Whitmore. And he was having some conversation about this stuff, and it blew my mind because this was absolutely true. When we move deeper into this age of AI and autonomous agents, because, you know, the back and forth to schedule this interview, Calendly is already an agent in and of itself. Any Zapier program is like a rudimentary agent acting on your behalf. When this thing happens, it will send a sequence of events. That's how most software works. It's APIs. They are triggering subsequent events. And then they abstract it all in some beautiful UX and UI. But these agents eventually are going to do things to the extent of booking your next vacation flight and your hotel and your accommodations, buying your partner's gift based on the specifications you gave it. But for them to be able to engage in commerce with other AI agents, they're going to need some sort of currency that is native to the internet, one, and also supersedes any sort of regulatory regimes or environments.
I see where you're going with this.
Only thing that can really do that is crypto. Specifically,
it's a blockchain.
Bitcoin. Because Bitcoin is the most distributed,
and it has you can see the transaction.
Small enough atomic unit where it's like thousands, millions of a penny, and there's enough of it that this could transpire. So these are the sort of depths that, like, you know, in this whole AI hype cycle and people looking at the next shiny object, they don't actually step back far enough, as you said, Zach, to really see the implications. And there is no AI without crypto, without blockchain. There is no metaverse without AI to generate all of the shit that's going to be in there and all these different things. So
I think what does API stand for?
I don't know what it's the application point broken in foot. I don't fucking know.
Essentially, it's basically the process in which something happens step by step. You start one thing, it's kind of like the chain of events after. You should look up the definition, but.
Definition is application programming interface. I wasn't super wrong. So anytime you're building a piece of software, like for instance, the platform I built, Vocalized Value, what I did there is I pulled an API from ChatGPT, and then I fed it into the back end, connected to my Webflow front end. And so then you go through the website, you put in you select the dropdown of what you want the theme or the affirmation to be, you type it into the box, you hit generate, and then that pulls, it triggers an API to ChatGPT, and then it spits out this outcome. Mm. And that's how most softwares and programs are built. It's a bunch of different APIs.
Yeah, one thing I want to do is I want to have, because we're on our website with the podcast anyways, is I want to have a setup where you have a little chatbot that you can search anything we've ever said and find out what episode, what time it happened. What's super easy to do, I don't know how to do it yet, but that's essentially what you just said is what I want to have. I've seen that before. It's pretty cool.
I got you. I'm going to send you a couple platforms to do it right now. Give me about 20 seconds.
Yeah, nice. Send it. I've seen it. I know it's possible. Definitely want to do it. I had another thought too, but it'll come back to me in a second. Essentially, I mean, so everything's just going to have to run and use blockchain technology in that way for AIs to even be able to communicate on e-commerce levels with each other, because everyone can see it.
Yeah, right. I would say, I mean, like, because I mentioned the war on crypto. I hope that that's the case. I hope that it's a decentralized currency and it's not something provided from the government, you know.
I remember what I was thinking. Yeah, so I think it's interesting how so many people are surprised with the whole crypto idea, and in terms of if they are, like, you know, scared of it or just unaware of it or, like, no to it. When it's like every Star Wars movie, every book, every video game that involves like interstellar travel at any sort of level, they use a system usually called credits. It's literally the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. It's like when all human beings are going to have to be using this same system of trading,
money.
Trading whatever, you know, something for labor. I mean, that's pretty much it. Yeah. A credit system, which I'm curious when that'll happen, when everyone's just like, all right, here's the one language all humans are going to eventually know. Here's the one, currency we're all going to be using.
English is what it's leaning towards. English
is the most popular online. Chinese is, I believe, second.
Yeah.
Like written words, it virtually right now, it's English and Chinese.
Mm-hmm. So with this AI, though, it could actually be beneficial in preserving people's cultures, because I don't know if y'all seen this. I was in the car the other day. My phone, I keep my phone in Spanish. And so, like, I get ads in Spanish and all this other stuff.
That's cool. And I should probably start doing that. Hey, real quick, Savon, before you do this, I have dogs in the house. My girlfriend's about to come in. I'm going to pause my mic. And then, yeah. Zach, I'm just going to make sure that they don't go off. But go ahead.
Okay, cool. I can hold my thought. All right.
No, keep going. Yeah. Keep going. I'm just going to, yeah.
Thank you. And so to the preservation. So I was on YouTube yesterday and this video was playing. And then I realized, because I started watching the video a couple nights ago, and I picked it up yesterday. And in this video, there was two guys speaking English. And then all of a sudden they were speaking Spanish. And I was like, damn, YouTube already integrated that AI feature. I was like,
okay. So they have it. We want to do it for our podcast. So
you just go in settings, it will automatically transcribe your voice.
Which is amazing, because we've actually gone through and re-recorded like 16 or 18 episodes to put up on YouTube just so that we could have it in two different languages. I mean, that's like literally so important. I wanted all of our stuff to be in Spanish as well. That's sick. I didn't know that. I knew that I had to have it in English first to just do it, but it's already integrated, which I'm not even surprised.
Luke, because I was looking at that, there was like a demo that was going around a few weeks ago. I forget the company's name, but it was showing like film a video and then like automatically you can speak in Mandarin or whatever, whatever. And it was really good. And so I just went down to the caption settings and like right next to it is basically like changed the audio. And I don't know how many different languages it had, but I was just like, God damn YouTube. They, you know, they're just so far with it. They don't even make an announcement. They're just like, yeah, you'll stumble across this.
Yeah. We can do this.
Yeah.
Damn, bro. Speaking of changing the subjects, I don't know if this is a big change, but Ancient Aliens released a new season, season 18, and it's catching up with everything.
18 seasons?
18 seasons now. But the thing is, it's a lot more up to date. I'm on like episode 6, but it's basically catching everything between 2020 and 2023.
Oh, nice.
Which is like a lot more of just the very old stuff. And so they go over the documents that were released and a bunch of everything being tied together, including like some of the technologies that we're talking about today, including like the sound stuff and how it all relates and what people are seeing all over the world and what's been listed for thousands of years. And there's arguments about, you know, a civilization start 5,000 years ago. I don't like Elon Musk's argument where he says it started 5,000 years ago because it's the first written language. I'm like, dude, that's not true. Like, there's written languages on pillars that are way older than that all over the place, but that's his definition. But I'm like, I think written language has been around for probably a lot longer, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 years in the past. But it dives into it. I encourage anybody to go check that stuff out, but it's really cool to see technology be able to reveal and peel the layers of human history back, because it's going to tell a lot about what we're about to get into.
Yeah.
Because what's happening right now could have already happened.
Exactly.
Like, literally.
Wouldn't we see some remnants of it, though?
We are. That's the point. There's a lot of remnants.
No, I mean, what happened right now, I guess if they went in like a different direction, like if they didn't go like propulsion systems and didn't go like, I guess in the same way that we do like electricity, like wouldn't we see like for instance, would we see like a 10,000 year old car?
You know what I mean? Yeah, it wouldn't exist anymore. It would deteriorate. But the scoop marks, that's what I'm saying. Like, oh, we're seeing stuff. Then you have pillars with languages on them that are 12, 15,000 years old when supposedly there's no languages that long. That's what I'm saying. There's remnants of stuff that we're seeing now. I mean, even on the UFO train, you got UFOs that we're documenting with video on surveillance systems off ships. And then you have like engravings on pillars, caves, markings all around the world depicting the same UFO shapes and what they do. And their stories all about it that are thousands of years old. And, you know, it's like it's repetition.
And a couple of things on that consideration is, one, if we just approach things from a, let's assume I don't know anything, the process of judging how old something is, how accurate is that? How many different ways are there to do it? You know, who are really the experts in the world that get to say definitively, yes, this is this much old? You know, like math is a very special thing because it's hard to argue with the mechanics of math. Right? That's why vibration and hertz and frequency are so powerful, because they're basically rooted in math. And no man can augment and change how math works. But they can augment and change the standards for doing processes and procedures like carbon dating. I'm not an expert there, but even anybody who gets into carbon dating or those sort of fields are going to learn from whatever was taught to them. This is what indicates it's this old, so on and so forth. So, you know, that's a side comment. But
sorry for the fog.
It's okay.
Just tap your mic.
Even beyond that, the idea that if there was a civilization that had been advanced and had come before us, we often assume that they would do things the same way, that they would choose cars or that they would look like cars, right? But who's to say, really, if we take a step back, that what we have is not caveman era, because it truly is compared to somebody's standards. When we think about zero point energy fields and the idea that you can have a perpetual energy source, yet we're still out here digging in the earth, you know, to be like, we need to get this gray sludge and it's going to power my real fancy city, you know, and people were powering things off of their thoughts or the frequency sent from their body. You know, it's like we just now getting into that type of shit. You know, I'm saying
they could have figured it out before that was the first thing they figured out. It's like, oh, actually, we create power. Here's some, you know, I get it.
Also, a thing that we learned on one of the podcasts we listened to from, it was like Randall Carlson, Graham Hancock, totally blew my mind. Carbon dating does not work for rocks. I don't know, yeah, like
carbon.
It's right. So like it has to be like you have to have some. So like you, like when they measure, like for instance, how old the pyramids are, or like the giant sphinx out there, they don't base that on carbon dating. They base that on, well, okay, they partially do. They base it on carbon dating on some parts around that. And then based on that, they look at like evidential, like in circumstantial things, like, oh, look at the water erosion on the, you know, the Sphinx's nose or whatever. That looks like 1,000, 3,000, 5,000, 6,000 years of rain, right? Or wind or whatever the fuck. So carbon dating is useful, but it's not, it's like, it's definitely not the only thing. That's a lot like of it living, is based on circumstantial things.
It's living organic material in the air you found it, which I honestly don't even think that's the best one. I like how they do the core samples of the Arctic, where you have ice, where you can actually like track the atmosphere, kind of what was in the air for thousands of years in the past. And you can look at like soil layers and you can kind of like pair them up. And then with the water erosion, they're kind of just looking at it. It's like, hey, this would take that long based on water on that rock.
Yeah.
Like I like those three better than carbon dating by far.
Well, I like carbon dating because it's like, you know, you get a, like that is based in science and math too. And you get like some type of.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is
things have a shelf life and then you base it off of that. But like, but yeah, I like what the first one, I think that was interesting. I didn't know they did that in Antarctica, like what was based in the atmosphere. That like,
yeah. So course, yeah, they take core samples. So essentially of ice, the sheets, there's miles of ice in Antarctica. So they drill a huge tube hole. And essentially, they can just like look at this, and they can tell what was in the atmosphere at that time. It's still frozen there.
That's cool.
Like a huge dictator. That's like the nanodiamond thing. That's like how, you know, kind of relates to that big soil layer of ash that's in parts of the world and all that stuff, which is super interesting. But at the same time, if you carbon date something, let's say there's like a temple, and like this is old as shit, and you carbon date something, it's like 5,000 years old. Well, who's to say that guy didn't show up or tribe or whatever, and it was already there for 10,000 years? And they're like, this is old as shit. And they built a little, tribe that hung out, and then they died there. And then they're finding those bowls, and they're carbon dating those when that temple, that structure could have been there for 10,000 years before them too.
Right. So
carbon dating is like, hey, it's the date of probably that thing, but it's an idea of what it's around.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Right. Savon, I know you have a hard out at 8:30, and I want to get your big chew in here. So I always say this for the listeners, obviously our podcast is called The Big Chew. So in every podcast, when we go over something like big, it's a big chew segment. That's something really impactful to leave the listener chewing on throughout their day. You know, one of the last one we did was like, 41 million people, are on Adderall prescriptions were dispensed in 2021. We don't even know how many were dispensed in 2022 and 2023. That's kind of like a big chew, right?
A lot of meth.
I know you sent us yours, but I want to hear it in your own words. Can you get, like, what would you say is your big chew that you want to give out to the audience?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think everybody's heard it at this point. Some people resonate with it, other people outright reject it. Your mind, entirely, in the most literal way possible, shapes your reality. So much so that it can move you into different dimensions and realities, parallel tracks. And in my experience interacting with generally the average person, they discount that in such a way that it negatively affects their life because it manifests as them feeling like so many things that their life is outside of their own control, that they don't have agency to change their life. By no means am I saying some people don't have a tougher luck of the draw than other people out the gate or different struggles or things that they deal with. That is entirely valid. Nevertheless, how you condition your mind, what you feed it, what you believe, all of those things precede how you feel and what you do, which are ultimately the actions that happen and take place in life. So if anybody wants to change your life, it doesn't have to be a substantial change. You want to go from A to B, or if you want to go from A to Z in terms of change, focus on your mind, your mentality, your outlook, your thought patterns, your automatic thoughts, your reactive thoughts, your proactive thoughts. Get a wrangle on that. First, begin by having an awareness of what you are thinking. And then begin to get to a point where you have clarity about what you would prefer to think, how you want to think and view the world. And then begin to reprogram any of those thoughts that don't serve that goal or that end state that you want to approach. And those things are the prerequisites to changing how you feel, your disposition, and then what you do. And following on to that, never cling to who you think you are. There's a really interesting exercise. Ooh. If people have never done it. You said you're about to be 28, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could go back to when you were different milestones in your life, 25, 21, 18, 16, 13, whatever. And think to yourself, in that period of your life, who were you? I give an example. At one point in my life, I was a football player. It's a football dude. Another point in my life, where I met Zach, I was the Cutco guy. Another point in my life, I was the drug dealer. Another part of my life, I'm the personal trainer, so on and so forth, right? And these are just one aspect of my life that I'm picking. You can do this in numerous ways, but the point is, when you do this exercise, you may be shocked at the different identities that you have carried and embodied at different points of your life.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
That is, don't ever buy in, commit to any of those. You can have your principles, you can have your guiding philosophies, but be flexible, because that's the only way to change and evolve based on where you want to be, but maybe even more importantly, what you need to be to get accomplished what it is you desire.
I want to tie on to that. So with what you're saying, I 100% agree with, and I understand. I'm glad you went through that, and a lot of people need to hear it. And I just think that there's another thing that's being missed is, you know, your mind controls everything in your reality. And you mentioned what you feed your mind. Well, people don't think about that. And it's like, okay, so for example, water, if you're like trying to change your mentality and you're trying to work on things and you are, well, your brain's like 80% water and dehydrated as shit, you can't even think clearly to get to that level with what you're feeding because you don't even have the fuel to do it. Like, that's kind of like the argument I would make is somebody's like, you can't, like, yes, you can think yourself into something. I get that. But it's like, if you are starting in with a brain that's not even like functioning at the highest level, it's going to be like way more difficult. Also, if you got like inflation, right? You got low oxygen, like all those things are like, I think, detrimental, and it keeps people in the same place, at least mentally, for a long time if they've been eating the same thing. The poisons that we have in the U.S., you know, like drinking the same, like all that stuff, I think kind of ties into, well, I've always seen the at least in circles of groups that I've been in, which have been many, I've seen the biggest growth in individuals start with like what they're actually, they're like, oh yeah, I want to be, you know, successful, their own version of that. And it usually started with, they just could just change a couple of things that increase their brain functionality, like their health, nutritionally, right? Their activities, like getting off certain things. I just think that's important too, and to add on that's kind of a big deal, because if your equipment isn't working, it's really, really hard to think into it. Of course, the exercises help, but that's the one thing that I think is massively missed. Can't function with a poisoned brain, you know.
Yeah, and I think Savon have to come on again, because I know I don't want to get into it now, but I know that you're vegan and your body looks like a Greek god, so
it's always look like that though.
Yeah, same. Yeah, but you know, that's something to talk about. But I agree with everything you said, Savon, and I like that you mentioned, you know, have your guiding principles, have your philosophies, have your things you believe in. My number one thing, I think I've come to realize this about myself, of what I appreciate in others is authenticity. And so I think that it's still, you can be changing, every, you know, be fluid and changing, but still be authentic. So I know you said, like, you don't fall into the trap of being yourself. I totally get that, right? Because you're like, I've assumed so many other identities. I've been the Cutco guy. I'm the life insurance salesman guy now. I'm the podcaster now. I'm the comedian now. But I've always been authentic through it. You know what I mean? And I think that you can smell inauthenticity a mile away. You know what I mean? And like, I think we're starting to get to that age. Everyone on this podcast is around the same age. We're starting to get to that age where people are taking off that mask, that one mask that Japanese saying, there's the mask that you show to the world. There's the mask that you show to your close ones, your loved ones. And then there's the mask that you never show to anybody. Right.
Yeah.
I think that first mask, especially getting into your late 20s, early 30s, I think that, I don't know. I like to compare it to like the high school college mask where it's like you were figuring out what the fuck you were, in a sense.
At this time, I feel like people were throwing masks on you, though.
Yeah, well, sure. You know? They were doing that, too. But it's like, I don't know. I really appreciate now when I have a comment, because there's still a lot of people who don't know what the fuck they are, right? And like, and they're older, and I meet those people, too. And I don't like those conversations. And like, I don't think most people do. But it's like, I love it when you talk to somebody and it's like, hey, this is who I am, take it or leave it kind of thing. You know what I mean? And it's like the authenticity is there. And I think that's, I don't know. I don't know if that, I just wanted to mention that, I guess.
Thank you. Both of those were super important addendums to what I said.
Sure.
And
we agree and we see a lot of value there. I mean, that's pretty much it.
I think there's no better way to close it off. Anything else, Savon? Well, how about this?
Well, Go ahead. Yeah, no, because of the many tangents in which I know that, at least between my interactions with Savon, that things can go, I want more of these because I need your brain to bounce ideas off of to further my brain. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I feel like when you take time to, even if it's a podcast, like, cool, other people listening, but like, to be honest, it brings me a lot of value. Mm-hmm. It's like, nobody I know, it's very difficult, maybe in y'all circles too, even have conversations like this that are longer than 10, 15 minutes, unless it's with your significant other. Like, they don't happen. And so I want to make sure that, like, we get another one scheduled, because this it fills my cup to be able to mount some of these things off of and build on top of, because that's kind of like the things I'm getting into now that I want more of, if that makes sense.
It fills my cup too.
It's only my idea. I don't believe it. I don't believe half the shit I think of, but I need to bounce it, and I need to get feedback. I need to be like, we need to like go down some rabbit holes together. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important, and I want to do it more. And it's setting time aside to do it is very important to me. So I want to make sure we get that done, and I want Savon to be on board. I hope you are, but
yeah,
I'm absolutely on board. We got stress test.
We can do it after we finish. Like I can click off the record, but anything to leave people with? I know we talked about a whole bunch of other shit besides crypto, which I enjoy too. It fills my cup as well, Zach. Anything, Savon, to leave off in the podcast? Anything you want to plug? Anything to, you know, where people can reach you?
So, just want to thank y'all so much. I really think what y'all doing is super dope. And even the idea, I know y'all have kind of two different tracks of the show now. You know, when we do the recaps, then these longer form ones.
Yeah.
The recaps especially, I think, are super valuable for people, because you get to like just chock it full of, okay, I need like a stimulus shot. I need steroids of information. Boom, yeah. Let me get it. And y'all did a really dope job of that. So
thank you.
Honored to have been invited on the show. As far as resources and things that people can check out, as this conversation highlighted, I'm into a lot of different things. As far as it relates to the crypto, blockchain, all of that, I do have a firm, Native Assets. You can find us on YouTube. Just search Native Assets or Native Assets, Savon Springer. It should come up. I have a Substack. It's substack.com/native assets or something to that extent. So all of the videos, for the most part, on the YouTube also have written components to it. So pick your flavor, as well as podcast episodes. So same thing on those platforms. Just search Native Assets. And if you're into music, I also compose and do music. So
I was going to ask about that. Did you stop for a while, and then you kind of when did you start again, or am I totally off there?
So no, you're not totally off. The last time I put a song out was 2020, I believe. Okay. However, I am sitting on a lot of music, and I am on track to put another song out this year as well. So I'm working on things, but you know, some things got prioritized and built up other areas. But definitely, I will be doing arenas and shows at some point in my future.
Let's go.
I just had to move pieces around. So save on Springer for any of that stuff. My son is getting lit in the background. other than that, as well, if you are into crypto and you don't know what SWE is, it's a blockchain, it's a network. Definitely check it out. There's a lot of things in this space, but not all of them are truly pushing the boundaries. And I'm very grateful and pleased to say that I work at Mystic Labs as the primary contributor of the SWE network. And definitely check that out. Just even knowing what it is and diving into it is alpha. I say that.
We will have everything in the description very clear for anybody listening, for sure.
Also, congrats on, obviously, your child, Kai, and congrats on getting a house, man. That's huge. That's huge.
Appreciate it.
All right, I'm going to pause this one here. I'm going to stop it here, and then we can chat.
Cool.
See you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Peace. Let me sit down.